Mother Day. It's about faith. It's about support. It's about never giving up, no matter what the odds are. We are Notre Dame.
So it's all come down to this. 6 seconds left on the clock.
Last play of the game. This is it.
You have to throw the ball here. I don't think he can run it.
Oh, my.
Three wideouts in the game. Shotgun snap. Here come blitzers.
Back to throw. Meyer. Look. Rolls to the right.
Throws it. It's caught by Samardzija.
He's at the 30. Afterburner to run.
In the open field. Inside the 20.
Inside the 10. He's going in. Notre Dame has scored.
And Notre Dame.
Indiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Glad to have you with us on this Thursday edition of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We've got a lot going on in the course of this hour. Eric Hansen and I will be talking some midterm grades for the Notre Dame defense. We did offense yesterday. We'll hit special teams tomorrow. Coming up at about 5:25, Carter Curls from IndieInsider.com. We'll have a recruiting update with him. And then at 5:45, we'll be joined on the phone by Notre Dame women's basketball coach Muffet McGraw. That is the first hour. And that's just the warm-up act, because then in the second hour, I've got another Tribune Indie Insider, Tom Noy, coming in with me for the 6 o'clock hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. And Tom and I will talk some men's basketball with practice getting underway. We'll talk some football as well. So all kinds of stuff going on. Darren Pritchett out. He will be back next week. So it is up to Eric Hansen and I to continue to hand out some of these midterm grades today. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready for it. It doesn't sound like I'm ready yet. I just, sure, I think I, sure, I needed to thaw out for a second. It was supposed to be warmer today in the forecast, I think, than it turned out to be. So I'm a little bit off kilter.
I thought so too. And I've got all these long sleeves and pants on. Somebody told me yesterday, well, it must be getting cold outside because you're wearing jeans instead of shorts now. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I've worn the jeans a few times now. It's chilled out quite a bit. Should also mention Brian Kelly today, named to the Dodd Trophy Coach of the Year midseason watch list. I just saw your retweet on that right before I came in.
Yeah, and a couple people have kind of commented on my timeline. Not that I've picked the candidates, but Ryan Day from Ohio State didn't make that top 22, which seems a little odd for a guy with an undefeated team in the top five, a first-year coach, not to make that.
Because I noticed Chris Peterson from Washington is on there, and they have two losses right now. So that is interesting. I didn't realize the omission of Ryan Day.
I think that the expectation was that Ohio State was going to be pretty good, but following Urban Meyer, I think you should get points for that.
I agree. Completely agree. Good point. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Lechleitner Door Sales and Service. At Lechleitner, they open all the right doors, and by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. All right, so midterm grades today. We're going to do the defensive side of the ball. Again, we did the offense yesterday. So we're going to go position group by position group with some letter grades. And Eric, we will start off with the defensive line.
Well, on the defensive line, I gave them an A- overall. I think that they've had some really good moments. They haven't had any bad moments, but I feel like there's another gear for them.
I agree. And I mean, when you look at, they ranked 63rd, the defense does as a whole, in rush defense, 154 yards a game. But you look at the pass defense, 28th at 195 yards a game. So I kind of feel like some of these games, in USC included, and I think we mentioned this earlier in the week, that Notre Dame with the front seven was willing to kind of give up some of those rushing yards, just the way the game was playing out and some of that. So I really, on the one hand, I don't think that that the rushing totals are necessarily completely indicative of how good the front is. And at the same time, like you, I feel like there's still another level for them to go to. I feel like there are times where you feel like that they're getting a lot better and other times where you still kind of wonder. And I think the biggest part of that is just the number of sacks that really the high number of sacks, most of them from the defensive line. They have 15 of the 18 sacks the team has, and they also have 28 and a half of the team's 52 tackles for loss. So there's some good disruption going on up front, but it does still feel like there's another place for this group to get to.
Well, I think, you know, some of the functionality of that lower run defense is the linebackers in the first couple games were out of place. And then there was a little bit of overcompensation from the safeties, at least in the Louisville game. I thought, you know, Alohi Gilman was trying to cover the entire field, and that left some gaps here and there. And I'm not blaming on Alohi. I mean, had people been gap sound in front of him, that wouldn't have been an issue. So, but overall, I think they kind of held, and they were the stability. They've shown a lot of good depth. They've been pretty good on the pass rush in the games where that's been allowed. And New Mexico just wasn't going to allow it. New Mexico is still in the top three in fewest sacks allowed, but they are in the bottom 10 in pass efficiency. So are they really accomplishing anything by trying to throw the ball out quick and never taking a sack?
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder about that strategy.
Yeah. Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa leads the defensive line with 14 tackles. Julian Aquara has the most sacks with 4. He also has the second most hurries with 7. Khalid Kareem with 5 tackles for loss leads that group and also leads the team with 7 quarterback hurries, and Jameer Jones with 4 tackles for loss in the limited time that he's been on the field. And it just speaks to the depth and the quality of what's going on, I think, with the defensive line, what Jameer Jones has been able to do in this brief stint after they came into the season really looking to redshirt him.
Yeah, he's caught my eye. He's forced a fumble and had a pass breakup too. I think they're are different eras of even the Brian Kelly time at Notre Dame where Isaiah Foskey would have been on the field already. Mm-hmm. He's that talented, but they're just so deep, they don't need him to play this year. I think he's a future starter, but it speaks to the level of talent and depth in this group.
So what do you see as the biggest question then facing this group, the defensive line?
Do you
over
want
the
me to
last
do the MVP
games?
So far of the defensive line?
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. I forgot about that.
I actually put Khalid Kareem.
Okay.
I think he's checked the most boxes in terms of showing up every game, statistically, where he's been involved. I think that he's, you know, there's been quiet periods for all the other starters and backups to a certain extent. He would be my number one there. As far as the questions, I've got 2. Can the interior defensive line find a higher level? I think they're playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Can they be outstanding? And I think that's also going to help the guys on the edge. And then the second question there is Julian Okorah an All-American? Are we going to see him play at that level? We've seen bursts of it, but I think in the game in the second 6 games of the regular season, we need to see a consistency. He needs to show up every game. We are seeing that from Khalid, I think, from Julian. He's been quiet. Now, in his defense, you know, you had the weird 2 games with Louisville and New Mexico where they were scheming him kind of out of things.
Yeah.
And in the USC game, Brian Kelly and Clark Lee kind of schemed him out of things. You know, he wasn't always in a position to get a sack, to rush. There were times he was dropping.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I think, you know, starting in the Michigan game, that would be a game that I would look for him to impact.
Okay. All right. So an A-, and the MVP of the group, Khalid Kareem, for the defensive line. I'll kind of lay out with my comments because probably need to keep things moving with our two guests.
Or do you want me to talk shorter?
No, you're fine. I'll just kind of lay back a little bit more. Let's go to the linebackers. What kind of grade do you give them?
I gave them an A-. Now, some of that is based on how they've improved. You know, if I gave them a grade for the Louisville New Mexico game, it would. If I threw out those pop quizzes, they've absolved themselves. At Ohio State, we had something called freshman forgiveness rule. We've given them a forgiveness
for
the first because of where they've come from since then, and also having, you know, basically even though Asmar played last year, he's playing a different position, so you got a lot of newness. I don't think they're better than Coney and Tranquil inside. But there's a lot of good things they're doing, and one of them that they're way ahead of that group is in tackles for loss.
Yeah.
So A- for that group.
And, I mean, they already have 22 tackles for loss as a group. Last year's group with Tranquil and Coney, 22.5. So it's pretty amazing where they are. So who is your MVP of the linebacking group so far?
I'm still going to, even though I think Asmar Bilal has surged, I'm going to go with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. They're pretty comparable in terms of tackles and tackles for loss. But I think Jeremiah just does more. He can cover. I've seen him cover slot receivers. I've seen him cover tight ends. I've seen him rush the passer and seen him play the run really, really well, and he makes big plays. So his versatility, he impacts the game more than Asmar, and that's not a knock on Asmar at all.
Yeah. And your biggest question for the group then?
I think this is a good question to have, is depth developing? Because once they kind of got away from the rotation and settled on the three with Drew White joining the other two that we've been talking about, you know, you wonder, how is Shane Simon doing behind them? How's Bo Bauer? Mm-hmm. You know, are these guys ready to step in if one of the starters gets injured?
All right. So that's the linebacking group. Each of those units, the defensive line and the linebackers, with an A-. So let's move on to the cornerbacks then.
This is a hard grade to give.
I thought so too.
Notre Dame is 23rd in the country in pass efficiency defense, but not all that is because of the corners. It's been an odd position group because they moved out Avery Davis and Houston Griffith. So they moved two of their best athletes out of the position. They moved in Cam Hart, and I don't disagree with any of these moves. In fact, I wholeheartedly agree with the Houston Griffith move. Move Cam Hart in. You've had the injury to Sean Crawford. Do we know what the ceiling for this group is? I think there's been some encouraging signs at times from Tariq Bracey. I thought Dante Vaughn played well in the USC game. And yet there's the decision on whether they're going to redshirt him or not. So B- for me overall.
I would agree with that. And again, I think it's a tough one to grade, but they have their moments. And once Sean Crawford gets back,
right,
I think it changes once again, just like when he was there. Okay, so your MVP then of the group?
I would say Troy Pride Jr. at this point. I don't think that's a runaway contest because I think Crawford can certainly get back in that mix when he's available. I expected a little bit more from Troy in the first six games. He hasn't been bad. I just expected kind of more Julian Love kind of play from him, and I haven't seen it consistently.
Okay. So then what's your biggest question?
What level of play are we going to see physically from Sean Crawford when he comes back from the injury? You know he's going to, you know, give you incredible effort. But is he going to be 100% physically when he's on the field? Is he going to be doing all the Sean Crawford things that he did in the first part of September before he dislocated that elbow?
Do we know, will it be a brace? Will it be a cast? Or
I think it's going to be a brace. I mean, Kelly talked about, and that's a good question for this week coming up because he's coming back this week.
Right.
He said, I believe Brian said he tore four ligaments in his elbow. That sounds like Tommy John surgery time, doesn't it?
That's amazing.
So I would think it would have to be a brace. I don't know how you can have even a soft cast and be able to have the flexibility in your elbow to be able to make tackles and bat balls. So I'm really interested to see how that plays out. But Crawford is an amazing story, and he's bound and determined there's going to be a happy ending to this, so we'll see.
Hopefully it works out that way. All right, and so our final defensive unit to give a midterm grade to today is the safeties. What kind of grade do you give the safeties, Eric?
I gave them an A. I thought they've been really, really good. I don't know that we've seen the wow plays, but when you look across all categories, they show up in a lot of places, in fumble recoveries, fumbles caused, interceptions, pass breakups, you know, and tackles. They've been, I think, as good as we have expected. I think in the second half, we're going to see more of those game-turning plays, even though Notre Dame is going to be in the favorite in all six of those games, I would imagine. Maybe they won't be at Michigan. Vegas is funny sometimes, but they're going to be a favorite in five out of the six at least. But, yeah, I've liked the safeties a lot.
All right. Your MVP of the group?
I think this is a difficult one, but I went with Alohi Gilman. He's the leading tackler. He's got an interception, pass breakup, quarterback hurry, mm-hmm. fumble recovery, forced fumble. He's everywhere in the stat sheet, and I think his leadership helps make Notre Dame a better defense.
Yep, I agree. And so then the biggest question for the safeties going forward.
Well, even though you have an outstanding third safety in Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame loves to play all three of them, and mm-hmm. they did extensively in the last game. Can you survive an injury at safety? Who's the next man in? Is it DJ Brown? Is it Houston Griffith, who just moved back there a couple weeks ago? I think it would be difficult to lose any of those three and still have the quality that you're getting right now.
All right, our midterm grades for the defense. We did offense yesterday, defense today. Tomorrow we'll take a look at special teams, and we will also name MVPs from each side of the ball, most improved, and some of those other awards for the first half of the season. Budweiser's weekday sports beat will take a timeout. When we come back, we've got a recruiting update with Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. And at 5:45, women's basketball coach Muffet McGraw joins us. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We've got Notre Dame women's basketball coach Muffet McGraw coming up in about 18 minutes or so, it looks like. Quick math. Right now, we go to the South Bend Tribune and Indy Insider, Indy Recruiting Insider, Carter Carls. How are you today, Carter?
Good. It's a hard name to pronounce. People ask me my name, and I feel like I'm like Carter Carls. It's not easy.
I feel like my tongue is being a little bit lazy today anyway. Like it doesn't want to move or something. But all right, you sound crystal clear, by the way. It's good to talk to you.
Wow. Yeah, the office phone trick. I know in weeks past, I've tried doing it on my cell phone, and I sound like I'm snorkeling, so good that I'm sounding clear now.
That's right, no snorkels. Well, Carter, of course, it was a big recruiting weekend last weekend for the Fighting Irish. They got commitments from four-star wide receivers Deion Colsey and Lorenzo Styles Jr. So what kind of information can you give us on those guys?
I really like, when you look at them as a pairing, how much they kind of complement each other. They're both 2021 recruits. They're juniors in high school. Won't be at Notre Dame until January of 2021. But I think they complement each other's games really well. Deion Colsey's a 6'4", 205-pound, big-bodied wide receiver. You'll see him on the outside making contested catches, and he's got strong hands. He's pretty athletic. Lorenzo Styles, much smaller, 6'1", 170. But he's got some speed to him. He runs a 4.47 40-yard dash. He's quite the burner, and he's got the bloodlines. His dad played in the NFL. So,
and Ohio State.
Yeah, and Ohio State as a linebacker. So certainly was impressive that when you consider Styles had kind of that legacy there of being in Ohio State and living in Columbus. Notre Dame was able to get him out of Columbus. They were able to get Deion Colsey out of Athens, Georgia. And both of these players, Colsey got an offer from Georgia, Stiles got an offer, a scholarship offer from Ohio State. So to get them out of those areas was impressive, but they're also very talented too. They're both top 100 overall players. In the 2021 recruiting class, they'll be joining a stacked 2020 class at Notre Dame. As far as skill positions go, they'll be joining wide receiver Jordan Johnson and Michael Mayer and the running back Chris Tyree. So I like what Notre Dame's doing recruiting these skill positions, and these are just two more to add to a long list.
Well, it was funny because when our sports editor, Bill Belinsky, was editing your story and you mentioned the three players that were top 100 for both Rivals and 247 during the Brian Kelly era, three wide receiver recruits, they were guys that didn't make an impact, that much of an impact on the program. One is still trying to impact Javon McKinley, but it was Justin Brent and Devontae Neal. So... You know, we were kind of kicking around the office, Sean, Carter, Tyler, and I. Is wide receiver recruiting just more difficult? Because you think Notre Dame's had really good ones. Will Fuller, Kevin Stefferson.
True.
Torrey Hunter. And they were ranked a lot lower. But, Carter, I guess what I'm getting to here is what makes you feel like this time those ratings are legit, that they'll stand up over time and these guys will be impact players for Notre Dame?
Well, I think for Colsey specifically, just getting to know him, his family, his background, I think this is a mature kid for his age. I don't think he's going to have maturity issues or any concerns mentally. He's had a pretty interesting life experience that I'll be touching on later this weekend in a story. And as far as Stiles goes, I just think the bloodlines and having seen and having getting kind of that knowledge and advice from someone that's done it before, I think that'll be pretty helpful. But I know that Notre Dame really likes to recruit guys as well that can play both ways. Stiles and Colsey are both guys that are exceptional defensive backs for their high school teams, could play defensive back for a lot of Division I programs. So I think when you look at these two, they've got kind of the mental makeup, and they've got the versatility to move to another position if needed, or they have the toughness as well. I know when you are a defensive back and you prove that you can tackle, you can hit, you can break up plays, it shows that you're maybe tougher than someone that only plays wide receiver. I know it's different and it's kind of situational, but I think just having that just adds some more to their games. You look at the 2020 recruiting class, Michael Mayer, Chris Tyree, Xavier Watts, all three of those players play on defense and do pretty well at that. So I think, yeah, the mental aspect and their toughness is there. Now, there are so many factors that will come into whether a player works out or not. I mean, you talk about coaching, who the guys are ahead of them, how they handle being in college. There are a lot of factors, so there's certainly no givens. There's no certainty there. But I think Colsey and Stiles have the look, that they do look the part. So, and they still have some room to grow over these next 2 years before they come to Notre Dame.
Carter, they also got a visit last weekend from a grad safety transfer prospect from Ohio State, Isaiah Pryor. What's going on with him? Any good news with him?
Yeah, it's not a done deal, but it's looking pretty close. There's no other schools that are really a heavy contender. It's really all Notre Dame right now. He's got no other visits set up, and he's already looking to make a return trip to Notre Dame. They really, the way he put it to me when I talked to him this week was that they delivered on basically everything Notre Dame did. The academics aspect, how he'd fit into the defense, the relationship with the coaches and players, how he liked the campus, everything kind of, every box kind of checked. The only thing that is left is he wants his mom to see the campus. So sometime in November, whether it's Boston College, Virginia Tech, or Navy, he's hoping to get back on campus with his mom, and I think that's when he'll make it official. Yes, things can change, but barring a major change, I think he becomes an Irish player.
I think if she comes for Virginia Tech, the coat won't be as heavy as it would be for Boston College, just saying. She may have to buy a new jacket or borrow Brian Kelly's big blue puffy jacket. And following up on him, though, just from what you've been able to glean, he played a little bit at Ohio State. He was a very highly rated prospect coming out of high school. How would you think he let's assume Alohi and Jalen Elliott are gone.
Yeah.
How would you feel like, I mean, is he a guy that could step in next year and be at least what Kyle Hamilton is for this team, if not a starter?
Well, I think the way you look at him is he's got a very high floor and a very high ceiling. So at worst, he is a guy that they will involve in a three-man safety rotation. They've put three safeties on the field this year, Alohi, Jalen, and Kyle Hamilton, and they want to continue that. And Isaiah Pryor would have 2 years of eligibility. So in an ideal world, it would be him, Houston Griffith, and Kyle Hamilton in a three-man rotation. They could do special packages with that. They can rotate them every few drives like they do with Kyle Hamilton this season. That's the worst-case scenario. He's still getting on the field. And I think the best-case scenario for him is he cements himself as a starter. He had the recruiting prowess in high school. He was a top 100 recruit, high-rated four-star. I still want to see more of him before I'm confident of that, and you want to see him and how he fits into Notre Dame's defense. But I do think he's good enough. I mean, this is someone that started seven games for Ohio State's loaded defensive back unit as a sophomore. So he should find his way on the field, no doubt. He's going to – with him, they would have a rotation. It's just a matter of how good really is he. So I think the worst-case scenario, they're still in pretty good shape.
Carter Carls with the IndyInsider.com Notre Dame recruiting update. Carter, who else among the visitors from last weekend should the Irish be looking out for?
Well, Will Shipley is someone that I talked to after his visit, and I think Notre Dame made some really good ground on him. He's a 2021 running back, and I would compare him, not skill set-wise, but in terms of importance, he's kind of the Chris Tyree of the 2021 class. He's an explosive running back out of the Charlotte area. He can catch the football out of the backfield. He's an all-purpose back, so he can do just about everything. Lance Taylor met with him one-on-one this weekend and pretty much made his message known that he's the top target. He's the number one guy on their board as far as running back is concerned. And it looks like Lance Taylor is expected to visit him at school today. So I think he's still far off from a decision. He's not even looking to really make a list until after this season. So I don't really expect him to make a commitment for a good amount of time. But I think this last weekend was his first visit to Notre Dame. There aren't a ton of heavy leans for him right now. I know both of his parents went to NC State. But I still think his recruitment's wide open, and if Notre Dame can get him on campus one or two more times, which I think they will, then they could end up being the favorite in landing him. And there's still a long ways to go, but if Notre Dame does land him, you're looking at a 2021 class. It's already ranked number one nationally and by 247 and Rivals. So adding Shipley would make it an elite class. All the skill position players they've been able to get in 2020 and 2021, you'd be talking about filling their needs offensively. They would have an explosive offense with these guys that they'd be getting, and Shipley and Tyree together, they'd cause a lot of problems.
Carter, Ramon Henderson, a kid out of Bakersfield, California, visited at the end of September. Seems like a raw athlete. Notre Dame projects him as a cornerback. And his offer list is really short but interesting. He's got some big-time programs on it, even though he's got a kind of a short offer list. What's Notre Dame's status with him, and why do they think that this kid who's, you know, a pretty good wide receiver would turn out to be a really good corner as well?
Well, to answer your second question first, I think the reason why he has kind of that interesting offer list, he didn't play the cornerback position until last year. Mm-hmm. He was really a wide receiver. He switched schools to Bakersfield Liberty, and they decided, hey, well, let's try this guy out as a cornerback. He's long, he's athletic, and once he did that, you started to see him get offers from Oklahoma, UCLA, California, and then Notre Dame in May. So I think Notre Dame believes that he's kind of like a block of clay that they can mold and develop into a decent cornerback. He's certainly raw as in terms of like technique, and he's not a player that could see the field immediately. But they think he has the athleticism and the length to really fit into their defense on that side of the ball. And hey, if he doesn't work out on that side of the ball, he can maybe move to receiver as well. So he's got some versatility there. As far as his status goes, what he told me the last couple times I talked to him is that really what he's looking to do is to silently commit to a program and then announce his decision in December. That's kind of his plan. So Notre Dame, I think they're so tight on numbers in this 2020 recruiting class. They've got 17 commits, and they will probably be adding the graduate transfer in Isaiah Pryor. So Brian Polian visited Ramon Henderson School on Tuesday and is looking to secure a commitment from him silently or publicly. And so would I be surprised if Henderson... Yeah, or telepathically. I wouldn't be surprised if Ramon Henderson is already committed. I know he wants to keep it hush, but he talked about doing it silently. Polian visited him on Tuesday. We'll see what happens. We may not know for sure until December, but I think the timeline has kind of shortened for him, because Notre Dame's message to him originally was, hey, we'll save a spot for you. If you want to commit in December, you can. But with recent developments and the Isaiah Pryor development, I think they're starting to maybe push that timeline.
Carter, last question for you tonight. Any big updates on how some of the commits are performing in their high school games right now?
Yeah, the running back Chris Tyree and the defensive tackle Riley Mills were both out for a few weeks with ankle sprains. Nothing too serious. Really were held out for probably a week longer than they should have been for precautionary reasons. They looked really good in their first games back. Tyree had 150 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns, all on 8 carries, and then Riley Mills had 2 sacks and 6 tackles for a loss and two big wins. So Tyler Buckner continues to dominate and put up crazy numbers. But yeah, Chris Tyree, Riley Mills being back in action is really the big update.
All right. Sounds good. Carter Carls, IndyInsider.com and South Bend Tribune. Of course, you can read all of his stuff and his latest recruiting updates at either one of those locations. Sounded good tonight. Sounded great. No snorkeling, Carter. Great job.
Yay. I'm glad.
it did sound great.
All right.
Take it care. Made you sound more authoritative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like that.
All right.
I like that.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Carter.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with Eric Hansen. The South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com, Sean Stiers. Thursday night football coming up tonight. The 4-2 Kansas City Chiefs against the 2-4 Denver Broncos. The Chiefs started off with 4 straight wins. They've lost their last 2 games, though. And the Broncos, who started off slowly, looking to keep
a little bit of their roll going with a 2-4 record. And then we've also got game 4 of the American League Championship Series going on tonight, just after 8 o'clock. The Houston Astros and the New York Yankees. They were postponed due to rain yesterday, so making things up tonight with game 4. Have you been paying very close attention to the ALCS, Eric?
No. I barely paid attention to the NLCS, and my favorite team was in it, but not really. They showed up, and that was about it.
That's what's tough at this time of year, as you well know. It's like, especially on the weekends, everything gets devoted to football, and right. Those games are obviously going on at the same time, so it's really hard to pay very close attention to
it. A lot of times I'm working, you know, on stories midweek at the Tribune. It's really difficult to see games. You know, in the past, I don't know, 15 years, the Cardinals have been won a couple World Series. And I think in the 2006 series, I saw one game from start to finish. And I've even been invited, somebody giving me free tickets. I have not been able to do that. It's just one of the things that comes with being a college football beat writer, which I wouldn't trade for the world, but that's the thing. You just don't really get to, you depend on highlights and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now I have a DVR, so if I really wanted to watch the games, I DVR'd the Washington games and I deleted them today because there wasn't anything to see.
Recorded them and then let them set them free,
yeah.
As it turned out. As a Cardinals fan, do you feel like they overachieved this year? Are you happy with the season they had?
I thought for them to be in the Final Four was a very good achievement based on what I thought talent injury quotient and all that stuff was, and where they were at the break, at the All-Star break. The thing that I feel like the Cardinals can do better is just being better with their front office in terms of making trades and signing free agents. I don't think they've been really smart there, and I think they've made some mistakes. I Tommy Pham and I share a eye condition called keratoconus, so he will always be my favorite guy because we've kind of battled through that, and I know what he's gone through to try to be able to see a baseball. But that was just an absolute miss swing and a miss getting rid of him and thinking Harrison Bader can be anywhere close to the player Tommy Pham is.
Did they think at all that Tommy Pham's career might be over when they made that decision?
You mean because of his eye condition?
Yeah.
No, but it would come up. He had injuries. You know, it took him a long time to get to the majors. He was relatively cheap. You know, he was years away from, you know, cashing in and having a big salary. But I think they worried about it. And I even communicated to him through my ophthalmologist who's retired now and teaches other people how to treat this condition. But I always kind of wondered if he was getting the best care, because with keratoconus, it really matters who your ophthalmologist is. And I'll say mine right on the air. Dr. Susan Park is absolutely amazing. If you've got this condition, you should go see her. She performed surgery on one of my eyes, and it changed my life. I don't think I have to have it on the other. It's correctable with a special contact lens. But that's why I wondered. He had so much trouble with it. And it's not just, not being able to see well. It's light sensitivity a lot of times. Day games are a big problem. And people giggle because I wear my sunglasses a lot. But for me, the sun is so much brighter than the average person that it's kind of, even on a mildly cloudy day, it helps me to do that, or I'm squinting all day.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, and a lot of people will tell you that even on a cloudy day, it can actually be brighter outside than some sunny days, just because of the reflection with the clouds.
Well, they're running a column picture in the Tribune some days when I do columns now.
Right.
And that picture, you know, it was a sunny day, and I'm squinting in that picture. I mean, my eyes are barely open in that picture. So,
interesting. I had never heard of keratoconus.
Yes, it's a coning of your cornea. It's a thinning and coning where your your cornea is the wrong shape. And so initially what they try to do is put a hard lens contact on it to make it like a saddle and force it back to the right shape.
Huh.
And that helps. And then my left eye got so bad, though, I had to have a cornea transplant surgery. And Dr. Park just did an amazing job with that. And I was very lucky. I got a very good transplant. Had one rejection episode and got through that.
All right. Very good. Glad to hear that it's going well for you, and it's obviously going well for Tommy Pham as well, but it's down in Tampa Bay. Now, he had a nice year for the Rays this year. We will take a timeout. It is 5:52. Budweiser's weekday sports beat. We'll continue with more right after this. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune, Sean Stiers. Mentioned earlier this hour that Fighting Irish football coach Brian Kelly named to the Dodd Trophy midseason watch list. Paul Christ of Wisconsin, Mario Cristobal of Oregon, Sonny Dykes of SMU, Herm Edwards from Arizona State, they're 5-1. Kirk Ferentz of Iowa, Luke Fickell from Cincinnati. He could be Fickell, kind of a hot name, I think, once this offseason rolls
around. Yeah, and his offensive coordinator is Mike Denbrock.
Yeah, that's right.
Really good last two years.
Exactly right. P.J. Fleck has got that boat rowing in the right direction at Minnesota.
They haven't played anybody, but no. I'll tell you what, they smashed Nebraska.
They did.
And that was impressive.
They did.
Up until then, they had just eked by some really average teams.
Yeah, they are 6-0 right now, but as you said, the teeth of that schedule is yet to come, but 6-0, I think anybody will take that regardless.
What teeth there is. My big problem with the divisions and the crossover games is they're not equal, and Minnesota's schedule is very different than Wisconsin's schedule.
Yeah, that's for sure. Jim Harbaugh from Michigan finds his way on the list, interestingly.
Wow.
James Franklin from Penn State. Brian Harrison from Boise State. They're 6-0, and of course, they've got a win over a not-so-great Florida State team, but that's still kind of their signature right now.
Yeah.
On the road, and it was a comeback win to boot. Tom Herman from Texas, Brian Kelly, Gus Malzahn at Auburn, Dan Mullen from Florida, Ed Orgeron, the old Cookie Monster, with a big win over the weekend. They are now 6-0. Chris Peterson from Washington, even though they are 5-2. Matt Rule from Baylor, another turnaround job. After that program had really bottomed out, once again, with the scandal.
Although they should have lost their first game Saturday.
Yeah.
The referees admitted they goofed up the ending of that.
Yep. And then Lincoln Riley of Oklahoma. Nick Saban from Alabama. Kirby Smart from Georgia. Dabo Sweeney of Clemson. Some names you expect. And Kyle Whittingham as well from Utah. So that is the list right there, the Dodd Trophy midseason watch list. But as you mentioned earlier, Eric, notable name not on the list is Ryan Day from Ohio State. They're undefeated and ranked in the top four right now. What's going on tomorrow in the South Bend Tribune?
Well, we will have Notre Dame women's basketball notes, ironically, from Anthony Anderson. Tom Noy has a men's hoop column. We have a fishing report, and it's not ice fishing, I don't think. We have the Mishawaka Volleyball Sectional. Al Lesser is covering that for us. Penn Volleyball at the Goshen Sectional. Scott Davidson, and much, much more.
All right. Sounds good. So we've got that going on. And we've got Muffet McGraw will join us here in just a second. As a matter of fact, she's ready to go right now. So I'll let you put on your headphones, Eric, and Muffet McGraw
I believe, is with us. Is this Muffin?
Hey, Sean. We had a long practice today. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Better late than never. We're glad to have you with us, Eric.
I was having Sean run laps as well.
Yeah, that's right.
We need a couple extra guys if you two want to come out and give us a hand.
Yeah. Work out obviously. You know, it's well documented at this point, Muffet. You've got a lot of turnover on your team, and I mean the number that sticks out to everyone is the 4 returning points that you have from last year's team. So that kind of explains probably things running over, I would imagine.
Well, you mentioned turnover, and we are turning it over quite a bit. We had 2 scrimmages so far, 32 turnovers in the first one, and 29 in the second. So. Yeah, we're getting better. We're getting better.
Well,
we have there's some work to do.
Have you, you've been coaching now, a head coach, for nearly 40 years now. Have you ever had this much turnover from one season to the next before that you can remember?
I can't remember. I cannot remember anything like this. To lose the quality, of course, that was the best class ever. So, you know, just to look at 10,000 points, 5 WNBA players, you know, that was pretty amazing, historic, really. So we've never been in that position. Even in 2001, I think we only had 3 starters that were seniors. So, yeah, it's different. It's been fun, though. There's a lot of good parts to it. They're very eager to learn.
Muffet, when I look down the roster, there's a lot of new names here, and I know – a lot of them from either editing or actually doing a couple of the recruiting stories. I did the Anaya Peoples recruiting story. Who's of the newcomers, who's gotten your attention here early? Who's kind of jumped out where you say, okay, I'm encouraged because I think this is going to be a really good addition or two for us?
Well, actually, both freshmen. Honestly, they look terrific. Sam Brunel, best shooter in the gym. She is a great three-point shooter, and she's 6'3", so she can do a little bit of everything. She can go on the block if she's a mismatch. She can come off screens, and she can be deadly from the three-point line. And Destiny Walker, who's a new player but a grad transfer, she's another great shooter from the three-point line. She gives us a speed that we're really missing, the speed, you know, not being able to run the floor like we did last year. So Destiny's going to be a great three-point shooter who can also really run the floor. But Peoples, you are right on the button with her. She might be the best player in the gym right now. She is doing it all. Works so hard on every possession. Never takes a second off. She can shoot it. She's got a nice mid-range game, which is something that we really need. We don't have a lot of that. So she's going to be having the ball in her hands, late-game situations. I think we're finding out a little bit more as we go on. And I think Kaylin Gilbert is probably our best player, but she's been out the entire preseason with different injuries. She comes back from one and something else goes wrong. So we expect to have her back after the break. But I think those are going to be the mainstays.
When you've got freshmen like Brunel and Peoples, they're very highly rated, obviously, but how do you sort of balance not putting too much on them too soon when you have as much turnover as you've got on this roster?
Well, you know, I'm having trouble with that myself. I'm putting a lot of, resting all my fortunes.
You'd like to find that out, right?
We're looking at the future. Look at the future. And, you know, we're going to have a great recruiting class, so they have to be battle-tested. I've got to throw them into the fire and see what happens. And that is something that they're ready for the opportunity. I think the thing is that, In doing that, I just need to be patient and understand that it's not going to look great every day. They're going to be inconsistent. They're going to have bad days. But they definitely are going to be the go-to players.
Muffet, when I look at the roster, I see 5-5-5-5. There's not a lot of 6-somethings on here. And I know Brunel can play everywhere on the court. And I think Danielle has, from what I've seen of her, is less of a post and more of a forward. Besides Michaela Vaughn, where do you feel like you're going to get the rebounding, the size, the interior defense?
Well, you're picking out all our weaknesses. I hope nobody's listening for the scouting report. That's a huge problem. Michaela Vaughn really playing well, leading us in rebounding, leading us in field goal percentage, just doing her job inside, really working the boards and running the floor. She's playing great. When she's not in, we become a perimeter shooting team, and that's not a good recipe for success. and it certainly isn't anything we've ever looked like in the past. We're trying to get Danielle Cosgrove to be more of a post. I think she can do it. I think she's got the ability. I think she is a terrific passer, and she has the shot, so you have to guard her. So I think she gives us a whole different look, and we just want to get her to be a little bit more on the block. I mean, I love that she can shoot threes, and we're going to use that. But, yeah, we need that, and we need our guards rebounding. I think Anaya Peoples may end up being the leading rebounder behind Mikayla.
Wow.
Interesting.
Joined by Fighting Irish Women's basketball coach Muffet McGraw. And, of course, you've got some new names but familiar names on the staff this year as well, with Neil Ivey going to the NBA. Mikayla Mabry comes back. She's on the bench for you. And Angie Potiff, who was here before on the staff, the director of operations. I imagine when you have staff turnover like that, it helps. It's good to have people that you're pretty familiar with.
It really does. And Angie was here, I think, 5 years ago. She was in the same position. She's come back after being an athletic director in a high school in Pittsburgh. So she knows exactly what she's got to do, and she brings a lot of great chemistry to the staff in order to keep us in line. I think we needed that. And Mikayla Mabry, I just smile every time I think about her, because she had such a great career here. And now to see her on the sidelines coaching up the guards, and, you know, she can get in there and play. And that's with the amount of people we have injured on a daily basis, it's a good thing. She's destined off the 3-point shooting, and just doing some great things for us. Energy, great in recruiting. I mean, she's doing it all.
Muffet, I thought I read somewhere that Kayla McBride was going to have kind of a part-time developmental position for you. Did I get that right? And what will that look like?
Yeah, you know, we're not allowed to have any more coaches, so she can't do any coaching. She can't be on the court with the girls, you know, or watching film with them and doing things that only the NCAA limit of 4 coaches can do. But it's a little bit like an intern position, where you just kind of go to the meetings, watch practice, and, you know, you can watch what we're doing to see, is coaching something I want to do? And so it gives them a great insight into the kind of day-to-day workings of what we're doing, aside from the recruiting, which you can't do either. So it's just an opportunity to kind of be an understudy, you know, and we're learning a lot from her. She's bringing all the stuff from the WNBA. We ran this, you know, here's how we guarded ball screens. Here's some great options for late game plays, you know, so there's a lot of really good things we're learning from her. But just having her here, I think the girls are going to really look to her as a mentor, somebody that they can talk to about anything, because she's been through it all.
Muffet, you have an interesting season opener. You're at Fordham November 5th. It's not often that you go to a place like Fordham. So how did that game come about?
Well, we played them here a few years ago, and we, of course, wanted to go back to New York. Danielle Cosgrove's from New York, and we tried to get a game back in that area. I don't like to start on the road with a young team. That's something that we don't often have to do. Mm-hmm. With a veteran team, it's not as big a deal, but this is going to be a big deal. They're a really good team. They're a really good defensive team. We're struggling to score. So I'm worried about that opener, and I think that every day I think I'm going to be worried about something, so I might as well start with that.
Following up on the scheduling, I don't have the full schedule in front of me. Maybe you do. I don't think I've seen bits and pieces.
I try not to look at it all at one time. I don't want to get too far.
Well, I think, as a rule, women's basketball coaches are the bravest schedulers of all, and then you guys seem to take it to another level. But what about with this so much turnover? Did you amend your scheduling philosophy because of the team you had, or did you say, hey, let's just see what we have and try to test them in December?
Well, of course, when you do the schedule, Jackie was still here. So, you know, we weren't prepared for her to leave when we did the schedule. And so that was done. And, you know, you have return games. I mean, we're going to play Connecticut. We're going to play Tennessee and Michigan State. So we're going to have some tough games, DePaul. You know, we've perennial played the toughest schedule in the country. So we thought we would, you know, have some trouble early on, and then by the time we get to the ACC, unfortunately, the ACC, I think we're picked to finish 5th this year, which is the first time we're not picked to win it. And that's probably a good thing. You know, the expectations for everybody will be a little bit lower, and we will, of course, still have our same expectation, but hopefully we can prove them wrong.
Last one from me, Coach. I can't imagine you doing anything else except maybe playing golf at some point. But, I mean, you're at the top of your game. I mean, I don't know that you've ever been better at what you do. And yet I'm sure people say, how much longer are you going to do with this? Maybe Matt's one of them. But but do you ask yourself that question, or are you just so focused that it just really doesn't come up at this point?
Well, it's funny. I'm wondering why I'm being asked the question. And I worry about that sometimes, because I think that's something that you don't ask men as often, because it's fine for them to coach through the years. And I've said numerous times, I'm not going to be coaching when I'm 70. I know that. And I am enjoying it. I enjoy practice. And so I just take it 1 year at a time. I never look ahead and go, oh, you know, I'm here for the next 5 years or anything like that. I just look and say, am I still enjoying walking into the gym? And right now I am.
If it makes you feel any better, Brian Kelly gets asked that question.
Okay, good. Yeah. That makes me feel better.
Muffet, I was going to ask you what need to get accomplished, your priorities before the season starts, but based on the laundry list you started with, is there anything that you just like to get accomplished in the next day or so?
Yeah, we do have a long list, and we were just talking about it after practice today, all the little things that they just don't know yet. And, you know, we've played the 2-3 zone for years, but now we've got like 6 new people coming out and trying to play the zone. And there's a lot of little nuances and a lot of different things we do out of it that are, I guess, hard to pick up. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that we need to just clean up a little bit. And as they happen, we're trying to scrimmage more, because that's what really is something we need to do the most, because we just got to get used to playing with each other.
All right. Tom Noy is willing to come over and play a little defense for the guys on the scrimmage team. So you get
I can
that
use them.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Muffet. Good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
Always fun to talk to you guys.
All right.
Thank
Take
you
care.
So much.
Thank you.
See ya.
Muffet McGraw, head coach of the Notre Dame women's basketball team. Eric Hansen going over a little bit. We'll take a timeout when we come back. Tom Noy.
Hello.
In the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Tom Noy.
I will never again be bumped by a Hall of Fame coach. I'm walking out the door. Just kidding.
Well, she's ready for you to come over and, you know, start shooting.
But you said defense. I'm not going to play any defense I go over there.
That was my mistake.
I get bumped by a Hall of Fame 2-time national championship coach. I should just go back home and let you do the rest of the show.
Everyone knows you
kidding,
don't play defense.
Kidding, Muffet. Kidding. You know, if I'm going to get bumped by anybody, it might as well be somebody like Muffet McGraw.
That's exactly right.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Outstanding.
Been a while since we've done this show together.
I almost got lost coming over to the studio. You know, you got Vince D'Addario coming in here all the time.
That's true. Not all the time.
He's coming in here, taking the hours from me. Like, wait a minute, where do I go?
Man.
I was hoping my badge was still going to work.
Just getting those shots in
I'm
there.
Coming in firing. I got limited time. It's already 6:12.
Are we going to have to put the gloves on you and Vince so you can fight for who gets the paycheck now,
Vince,
or what?
Vince is my guy. I got to give him a little hard. I got to give him a hard time.
You guys will be over there.
I'll see him tomorrow.
I'm going to be there at Steel Stadium.
I'm going to bump into him when you guys are like getting ready for your opening tomorrow.
I tell you what, if you want him to put up a fight, try to take some food away from him when you're in in the hospitality room. See how that goes.
Don't want to do that.
Yeah, I know.
What do we having to eat tomorrow, by the way?
You might lose a digit. You know, that's a good question.
What do we got for food? She better have something good.
I'm not sure what's... they always have good food over there.
For the last backyard brawl.
Yeah, and I mean...
I read about that somewhere today, too.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Talk to Keith Kinder about that today, as you would expect. We do. We sit down and do his pregame interview every Thursday. And I'll give you a soundbite in the next segment from Keith Kinder on the potential continuation of Mishawaka.
I had to give Keith's a great guy, but I had to give him a hard time because he had already coached up all his guys.
On
what to say. It's like, come on.
You got to give him some props for that, though, because I'm not talking about anybody at Notre Dame, but there are college and pro guys who don't get coached properly and what they should say with a microphone.
And Corey Oman did the same thing as far as, you know, we're only, with his guys, we're only focusing on this game.
This game.
It doesn't,
throw out the records. How many times did they go that far? Okay.
You know, we're only focused on this year. We're not worried about the series. And we're not this and blah, blah, blah. And
For the seniors who are playing in this game, it was going to be their last time they were going to play Penn anyway.
Yeah, so. But like I wrote about in today's South Bend Tribune, like Justin.
I did read the article, by the way.
You can read the article. Yes, you did read the article. You can read it on southbendtribune.com. Justin Fisher is a freshman last year watching his brother make the game-saving tackle of Ron Paulus.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, I can't wait to play. I can't wait to play in this series. I finally get to play in this series. And this year's the only time he's going to be able to play in it because it ends after tomorrow night at Steel Stadium.
That does stink.
Yep.
But again, I'll let you hear from Keith Kinder in our next segment. On I asked him if he's hopeful that the series will pick back up at some point. So we'll do that in the next segment. Thanks again to Muffet McGraw for joining us tonight after a lengthy practice they had over at Purcell Pavilion.
Is there a bird in here?
I guess not at Purcell Pavilion. I hear that.
Do you hear that? Is it just
someplace?
Me? It's like a bird in here.
It just stopped. Right when you said that, it just stopped.
There it is. There it goes again. It's going to drive me nuts. So if
there might be a bird in the ceiling somewhere.
Never a dull. I'm telling you, there's never a dull moment when I come into the studio.
Here's what it is. When I hit the counter, did you hear that?
I did.
When I hit the counter,
it's like a parakeet.
There's a squeaking. Yeah,
it's like a parakeet in here. Oh my God!
All right,
the show's officially. If the show wasn't
officially off
the rails yet, it is now.
No, we have no chance.
You know what? We'll just carry this over. I'm bumping Evan Sharpley off of the Leprechaun Lunch, and I'll just do like half hour of the noon show tomorrow.
Come on out tomorrow. Have some wings with me. We'll have
that?
A good time.
How about that cross promotion?
There you go. Huh? Evan and I tomorrow, noon to one, of course. 5-star dive bar downtown at Elkhart. Let's talk some football. You want to do that? Some Notre Dame football.
I'll do whatever you want. You're the ringleader here.
We've got some Notre Dame basketball talk that we're going to get to here in a little bit as well. You were over at practice yesterday and
yeah.
You got to see some things. So we'll get an update on Rex Pfluger and some other thoughts. How about some football? We're at the midway point. We're going into a bye week right now. What has impressed you the most about Notre Dame football over the first six games?
The defense. I didn't think the defense was going to be that good losing the guys that they lost off of it, whether it's Jerry Tillery, Drew Tranquil, Tavon Coney. They lost some dudes off that defense, but the fact that they've not yet, I forget what the streak is, not giving up 30 or fewer points.
Want to say
how many consecutive games?
I can't even remember now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's up there. So, like, defensively, you thought there were, especially the first couple of drives against Louisville when they were just absolutely back on their heels, you're thinking, wow, this, I don't know about this defense, but the way they performed, especially that second half, I think it turned the corner. Like the collective light bulb went on for everybody the second half of the Virginia game, where they just got after Bryce Perkins and they're sacking him here and they're sacking him there, and they just basically shut them down. I think they were trailing at halftime.
Yeah, they were. First time or this no I don't want to say first time. Yeah, they trailed.
That was the first time they trailed at half this year, I think.
That's right, because they did lead Georgia.
Didn't they lead Georgia?
I believe so.
Georgia feels like it was like 3 months ago.
I know.
And then you get bye week and it throws everything off. But defensively, I'm really impressed with guys. Their top two tackler or two of their top three tacklers. Let's make it three of the top four tacklers. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Asmar Bilal, and Drew White. They were going to have to be, the positions they play, they were going to have to be among the top tacklers.
Had to be.
And they are.
What surprised me, looking at the stats again today, Kyle Hamilton, we were talking about him, obviously, coming in, sixth on the team in tackles right now. And he's still a part-time guy.
He just finds, and we saw this, the first day we were in Culver in August, he just finds his way to be around the football, whether it's picking it off in the air, whether it's going up and making a tackle. Like, he just finds his way. If there's something going on and he's in the game, he's going to be in the middle of it.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's why they had, obviously, the faith to go with that three safety look that they had against USC last week. And, I mean, we've seen it from him. I agree, because I thought that this was going to be a season where, because of some of the questions on defense, the offense was really going to have to outscore some people. But the fact that the defense is still yet to give up 30 points this season, and USC's 27 is the most they have given up since Clemson last year, just the fact, I thought they were going to really have to be an offensive machine, but it has turned into a defensive led team, and there are more of the questions probably on the other side, which kind of
leads me to the next question. What is the biggest question you have for the Irish after six games?
The offense. The run game. Like Tony Jones.
You have questions about the run game?
Tony Jones Jr., okay, he's made me made a lot of us a believer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, he can do it. But then the next question has to be, how much longer can he continue to do it? He did it in the front end of the schedule. Can he do it at the back end of the schedule? Because after Tony Jones, who is there? We thought it was going to be Kyren Williams. He's going to redshirt. We thought that this great awakening with Avery Davis being moved to right. Ooh, there we go. Look, watch out for. He's not really
Nothing's
a factor.
Materialized. Yeah.
Sebo Flemister's not going to be a factor week to week. It might be a good quarter here, and then he disappears for three. We still don't know what the deal is with Jafar Armstrong as far as what he's going to be able to give them. So Tony Jones, I think out of all the maybe all the positions or all the guys, the main guys, the first 6 weeks of the season, nobody maxed out their effort more than Tony Jones. Now, can he do it at the back end?
Completely.
I don't know. And don't – I know what you're going to go, the biggest question is Ian Polk. Right? Right?
I tend to think that it is. I tend to think that it is. Just can he – he has still performed well, but like when you look at the fact that – the New Mexico game and the Bowling Green game are essentially where he has put up the bulk
scrimmages.
Of his numbers. Yeah, glorified scrimmages. That's where he's put up the bulk of his numbers. But in the games against the Power 5 schools, it's a lot different. Just four total touchdown passes and two interceptions. There's still another level for him. But they're also 5-1 and very close to, you were there in Athens, very close to being 6-0. With if they had pulled that out. So,
and Brian Kelly says it almost every week. Like, there is nobody on this football team that's more dissected, discussed, debated than the quarterback. And you can look at all the numbers and go, oh, I don't like his 63% that completion percentage. That's got to be better. He's thrown for 14 touchdowns. He's thrown two. Here's the bottom line with Ian Book. This is the only number that I think matters as you get deeper into this any season. He's 5-1.
Yeah,
5-1. Like he's won five games.
Two losses in his career as a starter now,
and people are upset. Aren't happy with him.
Yeah, they're
two losses in his career.
They're to teams, one a national championship, and the other is at least still in some manner contending to be in the college football playoffs. They've got a chance.
They're in the conversation just like Notre Dame.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, we're way behind this hour. It's already 25 after.
We'll see you in like 20 minutes after all these commercials run.
That's right. So we're going to take a timeout when
a
we
long
come back.
Timeout.
Yeah, when we come back, Tom Noy, we'll smoke a pack of cigarettes while we're sitting here waiting. Tom Noy.
That came out of nowhere.
And I will talk a little about the backyard brawl tomorrow night. You'll hear some of Keith Kinder's thoughts on that. We'll also have plenty of Notre Dame men's basketball conversation. That's when we return.
Plenty. We only got a half hour left.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Tom, I know that you're surprised that we actually get to talk again.
Hello? Does that mean we have to go to work?
That's right.
Hello? Come on, let's go. Hurry up.
Glad to have you with us.
None of this
evening.
Small talk. Our time's ticking away.
All right. Now you're going to put the now you're going to turn the screws up on me.
I'm turning the screws on you tonight.
Backyard brawl tomorrow night, 7:00 kickoff, Mishawaka Penn on WSBT.
We'll be there.
So I promised this soundbite, and again, I'm going to get this out of the way here.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to play this from Keith Kinder. I asked him today if he is hopeful that the Mishawaka Penn series, it's going to go on hiatus for at least 4 years, as Tom had in today's South Bend Tribune. Is Keith Kinder hopeful that the series will continue in the future? And here's what he said.
Yeah, I would think that it's probably a certainty that Mishawaka and Penn will play probably within the next 5 to 10 years. I don't know exactly when or how that's going to happen. And to be honest with you, that's the least thing, or, you know, the least concern thing that I have right now. But I love playing Penn because it always tells you where you are. They always expose your weaknesses because they're going to take advantage of things that they've seen on film. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun playing them in week 9. That will never happen again.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can do something where we play them in one of those bye week, or, you know, those open non-conference dates, either week 1 or 2 in the future. But, yeah, it's going to happen again. I just don't know when.
Yeah, and what he was referring to there is because Mishawaka is going to the NLC, their mm-hmm. bye weeks are only going to be week 1, or not bye week, but open
week non-conference. Non-conference
are going to be week 1 or week 2. And that's kind of where the issues have arisen trying to make something work. Not as optimistic hearing 5 to 10 years, maybe yeah, 5 years, but the to 10, man,
and that'd be tough. Here, let's face it. There's no other game outside of maybe South Bend, St. Joe, and Marion that moves the meter for high school football in this area. Nobody's talking about, and no disrespect to any other school, nobody's talking about Adams, Washington. Nobody's talking about Clay Riley.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about, you know, put whatever team you want
Penn or anybody else,
Penn,
for that
yeah,
matter.
Yeah, Penn or anybody. Like, Penn played St. Xavier, which is one of the top teams in the country this year.
But nobody
cared about it.
Yeah.
Because it's a non-conference game. It's
just a school from Ohio.
Yeah, like, they're playing some team that's going to travel 4 hours on a bus to come play Penn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I understand why this series has to go away, but in the end, it really doesn't. Like, and I said in the column today, the Mishawaka people will say, well, why don't you just work your way out of the Laporte contract that you have on week 2 so you can slide in Mishawaka in that spot? And the Penn people will counter and say, hey, maybe you just don't join the NLC. So I think it's a victim of circumstance.
And both points are fair.
Absolutely. It's a victim of circumstance. Like Mishawaka says, we're going to go join the NLC for 2020-21, and they're probably thinking, well, Penn will be able to get us in either week 1 or 2. And Penn's saying, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
We want to play Valparaiso, which they've done for like almost 25 consecutive years in their opener, and we also want to play a bigger school in our week 2 opener to kind of slingshot us into the NIC and into our conference schedule. So I see both sides, but I think at the end of the day, and both Jeff Hart, the AD at Penn, and Dean Halpert, the athletic director at School City of Mishawaka, have said, we've talked, we want to get this back on the schedule. It's just going to take a couple of years to get it back,
yeah,
but it's coming back.
Hopefully that's all it takes, mm-hmm, just a couple of years, because I completely agree. When it comes to this area, I think those two games, the Holy War game, St. Joe and Marion, and the Backyard Brawl, Mishawaka and Penn, those are the two games that people talk about in this area.
And end of the year, like tomorrow night, I can't wait to get to Steel Stadium. Like, it's gonna be a little chilly, big crowd. Last time,
great fall night for football.
Great fall, like you don't get that many of these nights,
yeah,
out there, especially from what we had last week over at Marion, where you couldn't even see. But that's another story for another day.
Let's not even. All right. Notre Dame men's basketball, Tom Noy, South Bend Tribune.
This is like the lightning round of sports beat tonight. We're just moving.
We've
flying.
Got like 2 minutes and then, no. Notre Dame men's basketball, they're gearing their practices up. They open the season against North Carolina. What are we, 2 weeks away at this point?
20 days.
20 days.
And it's coming. Like, it's there, and nobody, it just kind of sneaks up on you. Because here we are, we're doing Notre Dame football, we're doing high school football.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden we go over there for the open practice, and it's like, guess where we're going to be 3 weeks from tonight? Chapel Hill. Hello. So.
No kidding.
There's no easing into it.
Rex Pfluger injured his knee. It's been about 10 months now. Last December,
yes,
he injured his knee. What's his status heading into the season?
Ideally, they pointed to the North Carolina game and said, that's going to be Rex's return. Given what we heard from Rex yesterday, given what we heard from Mike Bray yesterday, given what we saw Rex just doing shooting drills, I don't think there's any chance that Rex Pfluger is ready for North Carolina. I don't think there's any chance that Rex Pfluger's maybe ready for the first month of the season.
Really?
Because
is he looking pretty ginger still?
It's just there's no lift. Like he's shooting. He's shooting set shots. Like there's no lift on his jumper, and maybe that's by design. I think the whole rehab, like he crushed the rehab. He was he's way ahead of schedule as far as his rehab, as far as his strength numbers. But the last hurdle for Rex Pfluger, and I think for anybody that has that type of ACL injury, the last hurdle that you have to clear is number one, the hardest, number two, the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just cutting it loose and exploding, like letting instincts take over. I think the first time that he has to go up and try to block a shot, which is how he got hurt against Purdue, and try to block a shot or in transition, if he's running back in transition to try to block a shot, that's going to be the biggest test for him, because I think it's still part psychological. I think it's part physical, but there's he's had no chance to just go 5-on-5, cut it all loose and say, I'm going to go up and either try to block a shot, or I'm going to go up and try to get a rebound, or if I'm out on a break, what am I doing? Like, does he have the confidence right now to go off his left leg and shoot a layup? It's just not there. Not yet. And I don't know when it's going to be. And Mike Bray said the same thing. Like, I think Rex Pfluger was relieved that Mike Bray finally went to him and said, hey, look, let's take this Carolina thing off the table.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, why push it to try to get back for Carolina? And then also, why push it? Like, he's not going to be a 30-minute guy, a night guy in November. He's not going to be a 30-minute guy in November, in December. He might not be a 30-minute night guy in January. Like, this, you've got to think long-term with him and how
easing
much he's
through
be
these
given.
Next couple months, yeah. And really think more about the first of the year, I would think, when the conference schedule begins in earnest.
Like, there are big games. There are a lot of big games in November and December for this basketball program.
Yeah.
With opening against Carolina. Then you have a league game against Boston College at home. You've got Indiana. You've got to go play Maryland, which is a top 10 team, a top 5 team. But just wait on that, because yeah, you want to be back for November and December. But I think you need Rex Pfluger on the floor for what this team wants to do in January, February, and however deep they go in March.
Slew of other men's basketball topics we're going to get to, but we need to take this time out first. Then Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues with South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com, Insider Tom Noy, Sean Stiers, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, with Tom Noy, Sean Stiers. We'll be out at Steel Stadium in Mishawaka tomorrow. I'll be there for both hours of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Eric Hansen will be here in the studios. Tom Noy will be there getting ready for the backyard brawl.
I'll be there for both hours. I'm getting there early tomorrow.
All right.
You don't want to be sitting in traffic or standing in line.
Got that right.
Got to get there early.
Dario will be there with me as well. Got a slew of some Notre Dame basketball questions to get to here from Tom's latest IndyInsider.com men's basketball chat. This is from Joey. Do you think TJ Gibbs is more the 40% three-point shooter we saw as a sophomore, or the putrid shooter we saw last year, or somewhere in between? Again, that's from Joey, not right. My word. just to make that clear.
Rough crowd. I was very impressed yesterday by what I saw from TJ Gibbs, because he did not try to take everything over himself. He played more like he did when he was a sophomore and less like he did as a junior, where he'll be the first to admit he just didn't have a good season.
Yeah.
So I think he's more, a lot of it was, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. I think he has more trust in his younger teammates this year to be like, okay, you know what? Prentice Hubb can do a lot of things. Robbie Carmody is a guy that just jumped off the page yesterday, but we'll talk about him later, maybe.
Well, let's just do Robbie Carmody right now, because Justin G wants to know where you see Carmody in the rotation this year.
You didn't know, but like he could be starting at Carolina, because Mike Bray, when we talked to Mike Bray before practice, he was going on about Robbie Carmody and said, you know what, what Robbie Carmody has done the first 10 days of practice, that's the guy I fell in love with. And we couldn't really see last year because he had the labrum tear in his shoulder, and it was bothering him basically from the start. So we never saw him, but he's aggressive. He drives it. He plays with an edge about him. Like, I know it was only one practice, and we always try to couch this because we had everybody. We had DJ Harvey going to the NBA draft after the first. Seriously,
right
after the practice last year in October, and it would look how that turned out. DJ Harvey's now sitting out at Vanderbilt, parachuting out of the place. So, but I was really impressed with Robbie Carmody, and it's just all those guys. Carmody a year older, Dane Goodwin a year older, Nate Leshefsky a year older, Juwan Durham settling in. All those factors are going to help TJ Gibbs become more the player we saw when he was a sophomore and less of a player that we saw last season.
All right. Question from Ed. Who do you think will be the X factor, or rather, who do you think will make the biggest jump from
you know
last
what?
Year?
I'm going to say two words here that my wife says I never say. Or actually, three words. Here are three words that I'm going to say to this question that my wife says, you never say that. You know, I do. Here are the three words. I was wrong.
Oh.
I thought the X factor was Nate Leshefsky. Now, he still could be.
That's who we've talked about before.
Right.
Since last season,
like,
anyway.
One of the reasons DJ Harvey isn't here is they saw what Nate Leshefsky did at the end of the season, and it was, okay, he better fits our offense for what we want to do. So, DJ, there's a chance you're not going to be a starter. There's a chance Nate's going to take more of your minutes. There's a chance you're going to have a lesser role. How do you feel about that? Well, DJ Harvey's in Nashville, so that's how he felt about that. But I thought Nate Leshefsky was going to step into a starting spot, be a 30-minute-a-night guy, and be a major point producer. Now, he may be a major point producer, but if the season started tonight, based on what I saw last night, Nate Leshefsky's the sixth man on his team. So I think I have to walk back a little bit with saying Nate Leshefsky's the X factor.
Yeah.
Because I think now, again, small sample size, but from what we saw yesterday and what we heard and talking to people, I think the X factor right now is Juwan Durham because he's a starter.
Yeah.
Like Mike Bray is fast-tracking Juwan Durham to be a main guy, which is one of the reasons why last week he took Juwan Durham to ACC Media Day. Operation Basketball, which is basically ACC Media Day in Charlotte. It was a no-brainer to take John Mooney. Like, he could have taken TJ Gibbs, a two-time captain. He left TJ Gibbs home. I think that was by design. Let me take Juwan Durham and get him feeling good about himself and feeling good about where he can play or where he could go in this league amongst all the people from Duke and Carolina and Louisville. So Juwan Durham might be turn out to be the X factor.
Interesting.
Or it might be Nate Leshefsky. Who knows?
Do you think that other staffs are that upfront with what you were talking about with that conversation with DJ Harvey?
Mm-mm.
I wouldn't think so either.
I think
they would rather just everybody stay.
Right.
But how much of that had to do with because of what they were going to have, just absolutely needing team cohesion this year?
Yeah, and I don't think the team cohesion was there, reading between some of the lines, and I kind of write about this in my column tomorrow. It's on Indy Insider right now. It's online if you want to look at it. But I don't think there was that cohesion and that togetherness last year.
Yeah.
With this team, like there, and I understandably so, because coming off, you know, the injury the previous year to Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell, and everything went so sideways the previous year, then TJ Gibbs is feeling the pressure. Like, I've got to carry this team. I've got to worry about myself. John Mooney's thrown into a captain's role for the first time last year. He doesn't really know what a captain does. Like, and then Rex Pfluger goes down, and then you have all these freshmen kind of wondering, wow, is this really what college basketball is all about, number one? And number two, thinking, am I really that good? Because they got it handed to them in the ACC. So there are a lot of different issues going on last year, and understandably, but I think this year they're more connected and they played that way in the scrimmages that we saw yesterday.
This is year 20 for Mike Bray, right?
This is year 20 for
Mike Bray.
Going
into year 20.
Year 22 for this knucklehead.
Wow.
Yeah.
We both had darker hair back then.
I had hair back then.
That's right. All right, we got to take another time out. We've got more men's basketball questions we're going to get to. This will be our final time out, and then we'll be back. We've got more basketball talk going on with Tom Noy, the South Bend Tribune, at IndyInsider.com. Sean Steyers, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We've got Thursday night football coming up in a little bit more than an hour. Chiefs and Broncos this evening on 96.1 WSBT. Good time to mention, no Brian Kelly show tonight with this being a bye week.
Bye week. He's sitting on a beach somewhere. Yeah. No, he's not.
This would usually be, of course, Brian Kelly radio show night on a Thursday with Tom Noy, Sean Steyers. We've got about 3.5 minutes, so that to me looks like it's time for at least one more basketball question to get in.
Only one more.
Prentice Hubb, do you see him? This is from Justin. Do you see him proving he's a solid point guard and improving his shooting this season?
Did he not prove he was a solid point guard last year?
I thought he was solid.
He was really good.
Had over 100
really
assists, right? Most for a freshman?
Yeah, for a guy that didn't play in his high school senior year because he wrecked his knee, and this was his first time out in 2 years, I don't think they could have asked for anything more from Prentice Hubb, and I think Prentice Hubb, Mike Bray said it yesterday, I think Prentice Hubb becomes one of the elite guards in this league this year. Like, he's a better shooter. I think he's another guy that just better understands how everything works. So he's not going to take those four shots, and he's not going to have those 10-second violations forgetting to bring the ball up the floor. Like, yeah, don't do that. But Prentice Hubb lost in 3-15 last year. Was Prentice Hubb is going to be really good in his 4 years here.
Yeah, and you could tell, I didn't get to see him yesterday, but the summer workout that we got to go to, you could see the start of him with some extra kind of lean mass on his body, and that kind of takes me to a question that Kevin had. He was talking about how Laszewski and Hubb both look like they're different players right now, and just along the lines of, the expectations are pretty low right now. Does that maybe kind of give you hope? Because that usually turns out to be...
This one's getting right... You're getting right in my wheelhouse for this one.
Uh-huh.
I love fans that say... Like, I got lit up on my chat last week when I said, yeah, hopefully they can get to 10-10. And people are calling me a Mike Bray apologist and everything and saying, you know, you're always dumbing down the expectations. I don't want to say, look, getting to 10-10 after where this program was last year, that's a huge step.
I think anyone would sign up for that right
like
now.
Like 10-10, and there goes Tom Noy saying they're going to be 10-10. We should aspire to be better. Look, you were 3-15 last year.
Yeah.
You beat two teams in the league. You beat Boston College, and you beat Georgia Tech, and that was it.
And you're not adding Zion Williamson to
and
the
you're
roster.
Not adding, you're not adding anywhere close to Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
Look, can you go from 3 wins in the league to 10 wins in the league? I don't know, but I'm not a math major, but going from 3 to 10 would sound like it would be a pretty good deal. Wouldn't it? Like, wouldn't it?
I'm counting. Let me get my abacus over here.
some guy, and I won't say his name, some guy was like, you know what? I think if everything breaks right, Notre Dame could get one of those double byes in the ACC tournament. So you're thinking they're going to go from 3-15 to finish in among the likes of...
If everything breaks right. They haven't even tossed a ball up in the air
North
yet.
Carolina, Duke, Louisville, Virginia. They're the top four teams right there before we even play a game. You think Notre Dame can be better than any of those top four teams? Like, try and get to 10 wins after three, and then after anything after that... Man, that's a huge plus after where this program was last year.
No
doubt. All right, I'm done.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Lechleitner Door Sales and Service at Lechleitner. They open all the right doors by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger's a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. If you missed any of the show tonight, you can find the podcast at the new Sports Beat app. Go download it. Looks great. Sounds great. Have you downloaded it yet, Tom?
I did. I have it on my phone.
All right.
With the little shamrock icon.
That's right, baby.
There you go.
That's right. Tom Noy, thanks as always. Good to see you. A very quick second hour. I will see you tomorrow night.
See you tomorrow night at Steel Stadium.
Sounds good. 96.1 WSBT South Bend.